Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 6th day of August, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
A day like today, compute naked.
Yeah, no kidding. You always should.
Yeah.
It saves you, particularly if you're opening your machine, you don't get the static electricity.
Yeah. Nothing.
Always compute naked. For those of you who are waiting for the YouTube stream and all of that, Steve is still setting up. He says he was stuck in traffic. I believe he was just napping somewhere.
Stay off of 490 near Goodman, both directions.
Yeah.
You know, I saw drove by an interesting accident on Thursday. Still don't know how it happened. It was at the 490, 390. One car is laying on its side. The other one's totally flipped over.
Wow.
And it's like, wow, they got to be really moving.
Very high rates of speed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You remember that car a few years ago that would tip over too easy? One of the small SUVs? So they put outriggers on it that it wouldn't kill someone when it tipped over. Everyone complained, oh, you're screwing it up with a... No, the outriggers lowered the center of gravity, make it harder to tip over. It still tipped over.
Yeah, right. Well, for the news, Microsoft email service users need to be careful out there. That's because Zscaler, a cybersecurity research firm, has discovered a new ongoing phishing campaign targeting Microsoft email users. According to its findings, corporate users are under attack, and the campaign is being run using adversary-in-the-middle technique to bypass multi-factor authentication. The adversary-in-the-middle technique, as the name suggests, places an adversary in the middle to intercept the authentication process between the client and the server to steal credentials during the exchange. This means the multi-factor authentication information is also stolen. Basically, the adversary in the middle acts like the server, so the real client and the client acts like the server to the real client and the client to the real server. So it's in the middle there. Right now, corporate users of Microsoft's email services are the main targets of this large-scale phishing campaign. A custom proxy-based phishing kit available capable of bypassing multi-factor authentication is used in these attacks. Various cloaking and browser fingerprinting techniques are leveraged by the threat actor to bypass automated URL analysis systems. Some attacker registered domains, which were typo squatted versions of legitimate federal credit unions in the U.S. For example, instead of the legitimate crossvalleyfcu.org, they registered crossvalleyfcv.org, one of the more common misspellings. Typo squatting is a fairly big thing. Again, although this first iteration is aimed at corporate users, once the technique is out there, it's only a matter of a very short time before it's used in bots to hit anybody it can. If you use Outlook or Hotmail or any of the many companies that use Microsoft's mail in the background, you need to start being extra diligent about what you click on. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft email users targeted in new attack? Your choices are, I don't use any Microsoft mail product, I don't think I use a Microsoft account, I'm going to stop using that account, I'm hiding my head on the sand in this one, you still use email? Going commando, baby! And, of course, other. So far, we've got 29 votes in the poll, and I don't use a Microsoft Mail account is the number one choice so far. However, that assumes you know whether or not the email system you're on uses Microsoft in the background. At any rate, we know that many of you will have more to say, and so or if you selected other, we'd like you to do this. Head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you again. And scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forum. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 6Og22, Microsoft email users targeted in new attack. And, of course, you can always, or at least for the next 2 hours, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, we see, look, attacks are pretty prevalent everywhere. These zero-day type attacks are huge right now because we all know Microsoft is not quick when it comes to patching.
Well, they rely
things.
On that.
Right.
The hackers rely on
That's
that.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
And even if they know about it, it's we're on the list that gets there. It could be anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 years before, and we've heard of this before, where they have known about this, but we just didn't get around to it for a few years because it wasn't that high of a priority.
Right. And so one of the things that you need to do as an email user in general, whether you think you're on a Microsoft account or not, pay attention to what you're clicking on in an email. Just don't randomly start clicking on things. I got one the other day that said, thank you for your order of $159 for this or whatever it was. If you think this is an error, please click here.
Nope.
I thought, why don't I just go to my bank and see if somebody actually got $159 from me? Lo, they had not.
Yeah. They were
so
just...
this was utterly bogus. And I know if I clicked on the link, it would start leading me to, it might automatically download a problem.
Because there's things in the background that could happen that would trigger it, what they call no click spots.
Right. And so, then they start asking you for your credit card information and sign into your bank here and do this. And it's all going through their site. And seriously, be very, very diligent.
We had a nice, sweet little old lady bring her computer in this week where she got one of those. She got an email and she hadn't placed an order. So being the conscientious, sweet little lady she was, she called the phone number and said, I didn't place the order. And said, oh, okay, give us your bank account number and we'll refund the money to you.
No, she didn't.
And they were insistent and eventually they wore her down and she did. Yep. So because we're all, we all grew up trained to be nice and
polite. It's nice to be nice.
Yeah. And now you have to be suspicious
of
everybody.
They take full advantage of that.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
That's their whole goal is to scam you out of any of your money, information, or whatever they can do. That's what they live for because that's how they make all their money. Is stealing your information and money.
And then the hassle of changing your bank account information. Actually, while the bad guys are getting a little smarter, they've started asking for checking account numbers and routing numbers because that's harder to get your money back.
Right.
If you give them a credit card number, it's fairly easy to dispute a credit card charge.
Yeah.
But actually giving them your checking account information?
Yeah. No,
it's
no,
a lot
no, no.
To get back.
No, no. Never do that. Always give them, if you have to, say, well, then no, credit my credit card.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't place the order, so the money wasn't taken from you in the first place.
Yeah,
right.
So
why
would they
you check your bank account using the real website that you normally use to check your bank account?
But see, that's what they're relying on. All these folks that are, say, 60 and older, because let's face it, the baby boomers have really taken over right now, and 60 and older, and they're prying on, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, they're ignorant about how things are handled, like Steve was saying. Why would they need that? Give them a credit card to put it back onto. They don't need your banking information, but they're prying on these folks that aren't that computer savvy.
Although sometimes it's harder the other way. We had an incident in our office this week where the boss was trying to go to her insurance company, and she clicked the bookmark that she's been using for years and got a big malicious website warning, maybe. And so she's trying to figure out what it means, you know, what's going on. That's the link. That's the right company name. Everything looks fine. I go and look at it, and it's a certificate mismatch error. But the certificate name and the website name were the same. So what's mismatched? And it was, you know, the certificate chain was all trusted. I finally figured out that, it had renewed like a week ago. The certificate was fresh, so it hadn't expired, any of that. Finally figured out that her bookmark had www in it.
And it doesn't want it anymore.
And the certificate, when they renewed their certificate, they didn't use a wildcard in their domain. So now take the W's out, it works. Put the W's in, you get an error. Because it is a certificate mismatch error, because it certificate right. doesn't have. So the error message is completely correct and totally useless.
The best kind of correct.
Yes. Yeah, that doesn't work.
What happened?
See, this knob is completely tight and screwed down, but the microphone just keeps spinning around.
Oh, interesting. Maybe it needs a washer.
Needs a new stem.
Or maybe unscrew that and put a washer in there so there's more room.
All right. So, again, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We're live on YouTube and Twitch and probably Facebook.
Not working, yep. Still, I can't get Facebook on the school's Wi-Fi. So I switched to my cellular Wi-Fi.
Then
I can get in and start the stream. Yep.
Right. So if you're looking to ask us a question online, Steve can see them on Facebook.
But, yeah, that's one thing that
I can't.
They finally shut my account.
Right.
That I've had for decades. Because somebody else hacked into it, but I'm wrong because I was...
Right, it's your fault.
Yeah, it's my fault, and I told them, I was, no. And they go,
yeah,
well,
I did
no.
get a friend request from Enright-Gobbledygook on Facebook. So someone's doing a name lookalike of you.
So they, I just said, heck with it, shut it down. I opened up another one, and all I do is connect to my special interest groups that I'm interested in. That's it. No friends, nothing, you know, it's like, it's all I need it for. I don't need to see all that other junk.
Right.
And people posting this and that, and it's like, you know, their opinions, you know, everybody's, like belly buttons, everybody's got an opinion. And
they're
it's
all
like,
full of lint.
Yeah, I don't need to
and no one
see
wants
it
to
or
see
hear
them all.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So it's like, yeah, no, and I haven't missed it. Because I still tied to some of the groups and interests that I wanted to be up on. The rest of BS, politely putting it, I don't miss at all. And it's been a couple of weeks.
Yep, yep.
And it's like, yeah, I like this. I like this a lot better. So I'm anonymous there. And yep.
Yeah, they say that there's people are getting very anxious and upset and bothered, and most of it's due to social media these days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people who don't do much social media. I still do Facebook, but that's really the main.
I got to find
the whole algorithm
way.
Is triggered to keep you looking.
Right.
So they show you stuff you like to keep you looking, and then they show you stuff that makes you angry to keep you looking.
Right, exactly right.
That's one thing I got to go in and do now is because I still get emails, you know, that people are posting stuff on an account that I don't have. So I've got to start.
Turn off that notification.
Throw it into the trash.
Well, yeah, that's right. You have to log back into your account to turn off the
notification. And you can't. And I can't, so I'm just going to have it automatically say it's spam and go
set
to the
up
spam.
A filter.
We had a poor guy this week. Same thing. And he kept saying, this is ridiculous. And yes, sir, it is. His daughter-in-law tried to be helpful, changed his phone password, and apparently forgot what she changed it to because it quit working. So then he got locked out. So then they erased it. So then it's asking for his Apple ID password. He doesn't know what that is. So they try to reset it, and he doesn't have a recovery address on. But he has a valid phone number. So we're trying to get that in. All right, well, let's log into your email. Doesn't know his email address. it's the recovery address is his other email address. Oh, okay, so let's go to your other email program. What's your password? I don't know that password either. So he had sheets and sheets and sheets of passwords. None of them worked. So I kept saying, it doesn't work, cross it off. It doesn't work, cross it off. It doesn't work, cross it off.
Right, right.
So we don't keep trying it.
That's one thing I have gotten in the habit of doing. Yeah. Anytime I have to set up an account and enter information, I've got NPass opened up.
Yep.
And I create a new, whether it's a login or whatever, it's right there. And while it's fresh in my mind, I can still see it as I type in the password. I'm going over to NPass before I even complete the account. I'm typing in the password so I don't forget it and setting up the website and everything else and giving it the name has made things a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, I do the same thing. In fact, although I do it differently, I let NPass create the password and then I copy and paste it into the form.
Well, yeah, but some that I've had... I tried doing
that. Yeah, some of them won't take it. I know.
Yeah,
those,
darn long. Or I had one that didn't like, they wanted all letters and numbers. No hyphens, no nothing. And it's like, what?
Well, you can make NPass do that. But so I have, I do that. And then in the notes section, I put all my lies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, what street were you born on? Christmas 2015. You know, just whatever lie I've made up for those security answers.
Yeah. What's your favorite color? Ford.
Exactly. You know, lie, and lie differently every time.
Yeah.
Which means you have to keep track of that, and that's what NPass does, because it's got that notes field.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you can also add other fields and rename them.
Right.
So if you've got a special key code that you've got to put in, you can create another field and say, rename that key code, and then pop the key code in there. Because I've got one program that every 4 months, it changes the key code. So when they send me the new key code, first thing I do is I sit there and copy it, go over to NPass, open it up, go to that one, paste in a new one.
Yep, that's the way to do it.
Done.
That's the way to do it. There's
assuming you remember the passcode on your phone.
Right. Oh, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
No, that's a problem. Because once I have NPass started, I've got it set up to use a PIN number. So I can, at home, just hit it in the PIN number, boom. Yeah, I do everything there on my computer at home. The one on the cell phone, no. I can look up stuff on that, and it'll automatically...
On my phone, I use the fingerprint reader.
Yep,
for NPass. But for at home, I have a password. And is it a pain in the neck to type in a really long password? Yes.
Yeah. But
I care? No.
You can do it once, and then if you're there, you can. I had it set up a PIN number.
Right.
So it just goes down on the dash, and when I want to use it, it pops up and says, "Put in your PIN." I quick put in my PIN. Boom, it opens it up, and there I am.
Yep.
Until you restart your machine, and then, like you, I've got to put in my long password, and I sit there. Oh, but you know what? It's worth the security.
It's worth the security, and I'm a fast typist, even with arthritis, so that doesn't bother me in the least. I just type it in, and I'm done.
And people always say, I don't have anything worth stealing. You have an identity that's worth stealing, so then they can do worse things, and the police show up at your house.
You have money in an account somewhere.
Even $5 in your bank account is
$5
more than they had
before.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And you've got space on your hard drive, and you've got computing cycles that they can use to break into somebody else's machine.
That happened to one of the guys at Cider. He created a test account just for playing with and forgot to delete it, and a week later his hard drive is full.
Yeah.
Because someone found username test, password test.
Yep. Yep.
Well, that's the thing, too. If you got a Google account, you've got Google Drive. That's 15 gig of free storage that's safe. And that doesn't count if you save your photos. That doesn't count the photos. Or if you create anything in Google Docs.
In any of the Google formats, Docs, Sheets, whatever.
Yeah, I do everything in Google Docs. And spreadsheets, everything. Matter of fact, my Ubuntu came with, LibreOffice, and I took that off. It's like, I'd rather do everything in Google Docs. I got unlimited storage there, you know, as far as photos and documents and spreadsheets, because that's the three that I use a lot. And I've still got 14 and a half gig free, and I'm already backing up other programs automatically to my Google Drive, which makes it handy that you can, you know, see it from every place else.
Yeah, I've got 19 gig in my Google Drive and 20,000 plus documents and the same number of pictures in Google Photos. And I'm using less than 4 gig of my storage. And most of that is videos and PDFs.
And that's because files in Google format don't count on your space.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Like I say, it's free storage for both your photos, your spreadsheets, and any Word documents, or if you happen to do file presentations. There's so many tools within Google. It's there and it's free to use.
Yeah.
So how can you complain about that?
Yeah, I every once in a while, you can go into, if you have Google Drive, you go into Google Drive and click on storage on the left. And you can see what files are using the most storage.
Yep.
So that you can then, you know, if for example, the one that's using the most is a video of the Pat Travers meet and greet that we did for Mastermind Lounge. Well, now I look at that and I think to myself, why am I storing that on my Google Drive when I should be storing it on Mastermind Lounge's Google Drive? So I will be moving that this afternoon. And there's a couple of hundred megs that I don't need, that I don't have to deal, 300 or 400 meg I don't have to deal with anymore.
He was the boom, boom, out go the lights guy, right?
Yeah. So, that those are the kind of things that you can do to keep your storage usage down. But again, as we're saying, if you use Google Docs, Google Sheets, whatever, any of those Google pieces, and you store things in Google Drive in their native format, they don't take up any, they don't count against your space.
Yep.
And then if you're going to give them to somebody else, you can download them as a Word document or an Excel document or whatever you want, and then forward that to them, send it to them by email or whatever. They'll never know it wasn't originally a Word document, believe me. They'll never know.
And they'll turn around, you know, even if you get something from somebody, say it's in another format, you know, you can pull it up to your drive and convert it from the doc to, say, a spreadsheet, Microsoft spreadsheet, into a Google spreadsheet.
And in fact, you can have it happen automatically in your settings
on
Google Docs. And so I do that all the time. Somebody sends me a spreadsheet for something. I want to upload it. There's no point in saving it in that format anymore.
Yeah.
So I just, I have it, everything is set to automatically convert. And so that happens, you know, I just upload some, drag and drop, drag it from the folder to the space in the window, in the browser window, and it uploads automatically. Boom, you're done. It's a simple, easy, convenient. And again, we use, Dave and I both use Google Drive, but the same thing is true pretty much of any system, although I don't know that they do the free storage business with,
I don't think any of them. Well, most of them give you some free storage, but Google at 15 gigs is the most free storage of any of the services.
And if, and the storage of documents doesn't count.
Dropbox at 2 gigs is the least.
Right. All right. That music tells us we are going to take a quick break. But we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I have something in my eye. Okay.
Your eyeball?
It could be. Yes, it could be. Could be my cornea, my retina. As expected, Apple updated its vintage products list on Monday with 8 more MacBook, MacBook Air, MacBook Pro, and iMac models released in 2015 and 2016. Notably, the first MacBook Pro models with the Touch Bar are now classified as vintage. Apple introduced the Touch Bar in October 2016 as part of a complete redesign of the MacBook Pro. Apple has since removed the Touch Bar from higher-end MacBook Pro models, but it's still available on the new 13-inch MacBook Pro with the M2 chip. The full list of Macs that became vintage at the end of July is actually fairly small. So it's the 12-inch early 2016 MacBook, the MacBook Air 13-inch of early 2015, the MacBook Pro 13-inch of early 2015, two 13-inch MacBook Pros from 2016, both the 2 Thunderbolt port and the 4 Thunderbolt port, the MacBook Pro 15-inch from 2016, the iMac 21.5-inch of late 2015, the iMac 27-inch Retina 5K late 2015, and the 9.7-inch iPad Pro models released in 2016 are now vintage as well. A device becomes vintage once 5 years have passed since Apple last distributed the device for sale. Vintage products are typically ineligible for repairs at Apple stores and Apple authorized service providers, unless spare parts remain available, which they won't for long, since Apple will stop making them. This, of course, doesn't mean the machines immediately become useless. You can just keep using them, but you'll be increasingly less secure and falling farther behind with new features. You can put Linux on them, and now, of course, you can also put Chrome OS Flex on them, at least if they're an Intel-based Mac. Just because Apple has abandoned you doesn't mean the hardware becomes useless. Got an old Mac? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
What's the percentage, Steve, of the systems that would have an Intel chip? Is it higher or lower?
95,
than,
probably.
Yeah, at this point, the old ones had the
68,000.
The 68,000.
This is their fourth major chip in 40 years. So every 10 years or so, they change chips.
Right.
So, but they've been doing Intel for quite a long time.
Early 2000s, yeah. So about last 20 years have been Intel.
So anybody with, say, a 10-year-old system is pretty confident that
Yeah. They just started the M1 and M2 chips. Which is their own design, and there's already a reference work for Linux on them.
Yeah.
That's out. It's very early days, so it boots, and that's about all it does. But it boots, and so they're ahead of the game now.
Well, that's where, again, like you were saying, though, put Linux or Chrome
or the Chrome OS Flex. If it's an Intel based machine, it'll absolutely take either Linux or Chrome OS Flex. And if it's an M1 or M2 chip, it will soon, we hope, take Linux if you want to move it on. But nobody's going to do that until it goes obsolete, or vintage, as they say. Sorry.
After vintage, they become obsolete. So vintage is 5 years, obsolete is 8 years. Although Apple does have a program where they still are offering batteries for many 2012, 2013, 2014 models. So they're more than 10 years old, and you can still get a battery for them.
So that's because batteries blow up.
Yeah.
Whereas the operating system just stops updating.
Yeah.
Then that, again, that's not to say that the machine is going to stop working. You're going to turn it on one day and it's not going to work anymore. That's a hardware failure. In terms of this, you just won't be getting updates anymore.
It won't run Microsoft Office 2021.
Right.
It'll probably still run 2019, maybe 2018.
Just go to LibreOffice.
Yeah, or the Apple Office Suite, or
So there are alternatives for you.
Say we had this conversation with a customer this morning. He bought an old computer, and then is complaining that his brand new Microsoft Office doesn't work.
Well, that's right.
That's right.
So congratulations, you noticed that. Yeah. Well done, you.
So download an older version.
Well, that's exactly right. Or LibreOffice, which is free and does all the same stuff. But that's a different argument for a different day. But the fact is that the machines will still work. You can replace the operating system on them. Just because Apple says they're not updating it anymore doesn't mean you can't put Chrome OS Flex or Linux on it and have the latest and greatest, newest, best available, yada, 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 on those operating systems. There's no reason you cannot do that. So just because Apple says it's no longer updating the software doesn't actually make it an obsolete hardware device any longer.
Speaking of software, what software do you know of as far as Ubuntu that you can use that's free to create forms that you can, you know, do like drop down windows and
Google Forms?
Google Forms does it. There's a section of LibreOffice that does it. There's a couple of PDF programs that do that as well.
Yeah, because I'm trying to, I want to create up, do up this form, and then I want like for one, the field to drop down, and you can select one, two, or three option, you know.
Right, right, right.
I use SurveyMonkey to make surveys like that to email out.
Yeah, SurveyMonkey does it. Google Forms does it.
Well, this is a form that we'd want to put up on this person's website, and then people can download it and use it, and then they can submit it, you know, mail it on.
These do it right online, so you don't have to download it.
You got to do it.
So that's a different thing altogether.
I'll try Google Forms.
Yeah, well, Google Forms does it online too. They eliminate that have to download it and upload it and all the mistakes that non-techie people will make doing that.
Yeah, see, I need it so they can download it, fill it out, and then
as opposed to just filling it out online
and then printing it.
Well, you can print it out when you're online.
You can print it out online. The only thing it doesn't do is download it before you fill it out.
Okay. Well, I'll have to check that out. No, this guy is, he's been doing this contest. It's for the largest teapot in the world, and it's down in West Virginia. And they've got this contest going down on where you got to make contact with what they call a one-by-one call for this contest. And if you get all the, I think there's like 10 contacts, you get what they call the full cup. But if you also get the bonus station, you get what they call the full pot. And you can get the certificate that you can then print off. And it's of this, it's literally a, I guess it was an old root beer barrel. It's huge that they converted into a teapot.
12 feet high and 44 feet wide.
Yeah. And they turned it into a contest. And it starts August 8th and goes, I think, for 6 or 7 days. And these stations will be on the air, and you make contact with them. And if you submit it, they will then, you send $3 in and with your sheet, and you can get the certificate that you've got either a full cup or a full pot.
Okay, so there's LibreOffice Draw.
I'll try that.
Let you fill in forms. Evince, E-V-I-N-C-E.
E-V-I-N-C-E.
Yeah, E-V-I-N-C-E.
I'll try the...
All documents are fillable-inable, if that's a word. But there's also a PDF edit, and like I said, OpenOffice Draw. So there's several options in the Linux world that will do that.
I've been playing around with so many different software pages. My main goal this week was finding... a number of photo editing programs for the wife. I tried that Photo XX.
Photox, yeah.
And then I found this other one, which is even simpler.
There you go.
And because basically all my wife does, she'll take this headstone and she crops it on down and maybe lightens it a little bit, adjust it one way, left, right, or whatever, and then saves it. And then she goes to find a grave and ties the photo up there. So people that are doing ancestry, when they look for their loved one, there's the information on the find a grave for that person. And, oh, there's also a photo of their headstone.
Right.
And she gets requests all the time, you know, if you happen to be out, could you take a picture of this one or that one? She's working areas. She's done literally thousands of headstones and tied them to it and gotten some real nice letters from folks from all over, both emails and letters, you know, thanking her for time. Because she doesn't get paid for it. It's just a hobby that she likes doing. And she's big into the genealogy and ancestry. You know one other big racket that they got going on, though?
No.
Cleaning headstones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they've turned that into quite the business for places. Will advertise that because so many places have these old headstones that are, you know, covered with moss and dirt and everything else, and they try to use stuff that won't harm the stone.
Right.
Because some of these stones that we've seen over the years, I mean, just through weathering and wind and, you know, stuff flying through the air, they've just about a flat surface again.
You're right.
They've been beaten down to unbelievably something.
Right. And then back in the day of acid rain.
Yeah.
Those were real. Those were real issues back then.
And, you know, the different stone types that they use, too. Material.
Right. It's, when you use the porous stone, and up here you get water in them that freezes, cracks the stone, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, it's just horrible.
Well, there's one over on Holy Sepulchre on what they call the east side. And I'd like to know what relative it is of mine. They've got this. This block has to be at least 8 foot by 5 foot.
Yeah.
And then its height, you know, a good 4 or 5 foot tall. And then it's got a crown lid on it. And all it says is Enright.
Yeah, I've seen it.
No other names on it. Whereas most, you know.
Are they on the back?
Nope. We've been all the way around it, and all it's got on the one block is Enright. Because most of them, yeah, they'll put their family names and,
yeah,
you know, you know, the family plots and all that. Yep, nope.
Just Enright.
Yeah.
Well, then you legitimately have a right to be buried there.
I don't know who else.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But yeah, so there's you know, we're finding people are hesitant to move off of Windows or the Mac because they've been using them for so long and they're quite familiar with them. But when a machine runs out of life, as far as Microsoft or Apple are concerned, that does not necessarily mean that, in fact, that machine is dead. One of the things that I've been doing is refurbishing, well, not refurbishing because I don't do a lot of hardware anymore, but taking old machines, putting Linux or now Chrome OS Flex on them and moving them on to refugees, people, whoever needs them. And it means that those machines get a new life. And it's not difficult to do. As long as what I've discovered is I've got a couple of machines that are too old. They do not boot from USB. That is a need.
You That's have to an be issue.
Able to boot from USB. Or you have to have a working CD-ROM drive, DVD drive. But beyond that... The ease that with which you can put on a different operating system, whether it's a version of Linux or Chrome OS Flex, and then just continue to use the machine is astonishing. In fact, in a few weeks, assuming Steve gets me a machine, in a few weeks I'll be doing an event for Apple Cider where I'll be talking about Chrome OS Flex. On obsolete, if not vintage, at least. Vintage, if not obsolete, Macs.
That's going to be on Wednesday, September 14th.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And it's going to be fun. And my hope is that I will actually have a vintage Mac with Chrome OS Flex on it to show people. So that'll be fun. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hello, Nick. I have a new problem. I go to, like, the iHeartRadio website, and I always used to listen to things on there and podcasts. Now, just 2 days ago, I go to play it, and it just keeps buffering and buffering. The round circle keeps going. This never happened before. What would be the cause of that?
That's a very good question.
The circle keeps going around and it won't play.
Yeah.
Everything else on the laptop works good.
Yeah, I'm going there now to see if I can start something.
What web browser are you using?
Chrome.
Try clearing the cache, maybe?
How do you do that?
Clear cache. In settings somewhere, we're looking for
okay,
it.
Okay, settings. What, would it be too full or something? I always used to listen to everything there.
Well, that's yes, sometimes that can happen. So your cache in your browser stores little things that you may need to go back to so it doesn't have to download them again. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the cache can get too full so that there's no room for more cache. Or it gets hung trying to download something that would be faster to download again rather than load it from cache. So clearing the cache is one of the first quick
safe
steps.
Safe and easiest things
yeah.
to do.
How do you actually do that?
You want to click the little three-dot icon in the upper right corner.
Okay.
Click on More Tools and then Clear Browsing Data.
Okay, I just found it. And clear data, everything?
Yep.
Last 7 days or how long?
That's pretty well up to you, but usually a week is fine.
Or should I do 4 weeks?
Although, I have to tell you, I'm on the iHeartRadio site right now and trying to load something, and I'm just getting the spinner, too.
Oh.
So I don't think it's you.
Could be iHeartRadio.
Could be iHeartRadio.
Oh.
I'm getting the spinner. I'm not getting any music. No.
Mine's working.
Just keep spinning and spinning.
Yeah, but are you on Chrome?
No. Let me go to Chrome. I'm in Safari at the moment.
Yeah, I'm in Chrome.
I'm going to clear the data anyway, so you're thinking maybe it's their fault.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is not working on my Chrome. Now, as to whether it would work in Firefox or some other web browser, that's a different story, but it does not look like it's working on Chrome right now.
Yeah, this just started 2 days ago. I'm going to clear it. The data anyway.
Well, clear it for the least amount. The what is it? A
4
week,
days.
4 days, whatever the number is.
7 days.
Yeah. Clear for 7 days because that takes you past when it stopped working.
Yeah.
But it's not working for me either, so I don't know that it's got anything to do with you.
My Chrome
is he checking his
too.
Other browser?
Yeah, it's not working in my Chrome either.
So it's not Chrome. Clearing the data is go open up Firefox. And try going into Firefox and running it from there. Try a different browser first before clearing out the cache.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yep. Good luck.
It could be possibly their fault.
Or it's a mismatch with Chrome, which one or the other will fix at some point. But in the meantime, you should be able to use Firefox to listen to your music.
All right, thank you very much. I'll listen to your show like I always do, and if you get any more updates, I'll be listening.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Yep, we're Dave's going shake and bake. Oh, that must have been when you were fiddling with the thing. Wham is interesting.
I got an ad playing.
Karen Owen says Wham is working okay for me on iHeartRadio website with Chrome. I was looking at one of the other stations. I just randomly clicked on one, and I did have a constant spinning thing. So maybe it depends on what station you get as well. So that's a possibility.
One thing I'm going to sort of break into is we were talking about different software and that and going to Ubuntu. One thing I'm going to kind of tease before we go for our break at the top of the hour is – as you folks know, I've been slowly going to the dark side of Xubuntu.
We have cookies.
Big time. And there has been one piece of software that I've been holding me back? Well, I did some research, and I found one that I think a lot of our listeners will be surprised at, one, the price and the use and how easy it is to work. But we'll be talking about that after the top of the hour.
Yeah, this is a great program. It's been around for 20-plus years and 25 years, as a matter of fact.
It is unbelievable, and I don't have quite a few good things, as Nick will, too. Like I say, I happen to mention it, Nick goes, oh, yeah, that's been around for a long time. And that finally took me to where now my main goal is by January 1st, I will be fully over to Xubuntu for me and the other computers in my house. Yep. Except for one laptop, which I've got to still run Windows on because this one piece of software, for some reason, the guy just doesn't want to. He's got the Mac in there and he's got the Windows, but he hasn't gotten around to doing a Linux version. It's like, Chrome and everything else is taking over. Why wouldn't you go with the flow?
Go with the flow. That's exactly right.
I mean, even this other program that's been around, but these other guys came out and took it over and really vastly improved to it. They go, oh, no. If we're doing it for this system, we're doing it for Mac, we're doing it for Windows, we're doing it for Linux, and they're even supporting Raspberry Pis.
Right. Well, many, many people have a little Raspberry Pi that does nothing but various logging functions.
Yeah.
You know,
it's also a very popular music streamer.
Yep.
Put all your music on one Pi, and then you can see it from any computer in your house.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And video as well, as a matter of fact. I serve many of my CDs I've ripped to a Raspberry Pi. I have a terabyte hard drive on a Raspberry Pi. And I have a lot of that stuff streaming from there. So you can do an awful lot with a non-Windows machine. The question is, are the programmers caught up yet?
Yeah, that's the big thing.
Yep. And so we have to understand that many computers are capable of running a non-Windows system, but we've all gotten complacent. Mm-hmm. We complain about Windows and we don't do anything about it. Well, you can do something about it if you want to, or you can just keep complaining. Or, you know, and I must say, there are millions and millions of people for whom Windows works great. Yep. And if you're one of those, God bless you.
And equally millions where it doesn't.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's kind of like what we've been saying for years about cutting the cord, that people are complaining about how high their cable bill is getting, but you don't have to get your television from cable anymore.
Right.
In fact, see, now the problem is there's too many channels, each with one show.
Well, yeah.
It'd be interesting if they could collect all of those streaming channels together into some sort of like cable.
Wow. Wouldn't that be interesting? All right, that music tells us you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but do not go too far because we will be back after a slightly longer break with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with all of you. Yes? You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will be back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you because it is with your very generous support that we continue to be fully and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901 Jazz. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Still.
And we're going to talk to Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hey, guys. Suggestion maybe for the gentleman having a problem with the iHeartRadio.
Mm-hmm.
Download the app from the Microsoft Store. It works perfectly.
That's true.
I did do it myself just to test it, and it worked okay for me.
Yep. Many places, including, by the way, Jazz 90.1, have apps now that run all of the stuff that you would want from a radio station. And you just download the app, and you can run it on your computer, on your phone, rather. And if you have, for example, a Chromebook, and you can download the the Android app and run it on a Chromebook. You get all the features, all the abilities right on your Chromebook, on your, you know, right on your little desktop.
Another thing about the app, whether you get it wherever you get it from, you're able to cast it also.
Right.
So they added that onto it, so you could always cast something else if you wanted to.
I had a customer this week ask about an HD radio station, broadcast HD 2, and I can't find any way to get it on a computer or an app. It's from a local radio station. HD 1 is in the app, but HD 2 is not.
Interesting. But I believe I remember one of them, and I don't know if it's Roku or somebody has an iHeartRadio app for the Roku player, so you could play it right on your...
Yep, I have that too.
Yeah, there you go. So, the stuff is everywhere.
Do the end around. Just like if you don't want to run Facebook on your phone, you can just do it through the browser.
That's exactly right.
You know, it works. Actually, I think it works better if you ask me.
Yeah, I do too.
I hate that Facebook app. It's terrible.
Yeah, it really is.
But yeah, I just thought I'd suggest that, and then maybe that'll work even better for him.
Good thinking, Mark. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, there's so many
different ways of doing the same thing.
So many ways these days. So all you have to do is figure out which one works best for you in any particular situation. I suspect that if you have a Google TV or the Google Chromecast,
yep,
that you could also get the app, the Android base app for that. You can do it that way. If you've got, we were talking about Raspberry Pis earlier. There's programs like Clementine and several others that will let you stream audio right, you know, from your Raspberry Pi to a speaker, or cast it somewhere else if you like. There's many ways to skin that cat.
Mm-hmm.
Don't write in. I love cats. I have cats of my own. I love them. Don't write in. Shut up.
But when you skin them, there are many ways to do it.
There are many ways to do it. So if you're looking for ways to play music, then there are many, many of them, and you're no longer limited to any one device anymore. You can play it over your Amazon speaker or your Google speaker. You can play it, you know, pretty much anywhere you like.
There are a lot of options out there to do various tasks. All you have to do is really go looking.
Right.
And that's where Google search, whether it's in the Play Store or Microsoft Store or just the web itself.
Right.
Just do searching. Do your homework. And you'd be amazed at the amount of programs and information that you can learn and find stuff.
Yep.
Which leads me into the segue of what I discovered.
Well, but let me finish this first. Okay. I mean, let's just take Jazz 90.1 as an example. You can listen through their website. You can listen through their app.
Mm-hmm.
You can listen through the audio stream on something like Clementine or whatever. Or you can listen through your smart speaker.
Yep.
So you've got a plethora of choices. And I want to thank the person who taught me the word plethora. It means a lot. So
hold on, Neil.
Thank you very much. I apparently needed that. But yeah, so there's a multiple number of ways that you can stream your audio and your video. You know, the same thing. If in a lot of ways. So I'm sorry, we seem to be slowing down on your stuff there, Dave.
No, that's fine.
Our next caller is Al from Rochester, New York. How are you, Al?
Good afternoon, guys. Hope you're keeping cool.
We are that. You?
I am ensconced in a cool basement.
Nice. Very nice.
Doing paperwork.
I'm sorry.
No, it has to be done. Question for you, since you guys are Pixel owners.
Yeah.
Something that sort of nagged at me, but I've never bothered thinking about it too hard. When I go to the Play Store to update my apps, I'm regularly getting a dozen or more apps to be updated at least once a week. And I'm just wondering, is that normal? I mean, I don't have a lot of things additionally loaded on my phone, but it seems like I'm getting the same apps updated over and over again.
A lot of apps are being much more diligent about updating than they used to be, and that's a good thing because it's security updates for the most part.
You can take a look at what version it's updating to and see if it's a higher version number, because it may be something is stuck and it's didn't make the update last time and it's trying again.
Right. We see that fairly often as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But okay. Yeah, I haven't gotten
there also is an auto update feature where it just updates them in the background without you looking.
Right.
But there can be dangers there. If the update doesn't work, then you lose access to that app until they fix it. But you wouldn't know that from an auto update versus a manual update anyway.
Yeah, right. I'm a bit reluctant on the automatic part. I prefer to sort of keep an eyeball on what's
have
going on.
Have control.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, I just wanted, it'll be even some of the majors. It'll be Google Maps and Calendar and whatever, Firefox.
Yeah, they do update fairly regularly. Mainly, again, as I said, they're security apps or feature apps. And it does happen. It depends on how many apps you have and what their update schedule is. The problem is you get one or two update today, one or two update tomorrow, one or two update the next day. And it feels like you're updating all the time, but it's generally different products.
Yes. Well, sort of. But, yeah, like I said, I just did an update this morning, and I had 21 apps update. And I would say I did it last week and got a dozen before that. So it's...
Yeah. Like I said, mine update in the background, so I don't see that as much anymore.
Same here.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's nice to know you guys are so trusting and everything, so.
Yeah. Well, I only have a very few apps
that I use,
and I trust them, and then, so that's all right.
We jokingly call that the John McCain rule in the Apple community. Apparently, Tim Cook was testifying before Congress, and John McCain asked him something. Why do I have a 27 on this little icon here? Well, sir, that's because you have 27 updates that need to be installed.
Right.
Why doesn't it just do it himself? Because that's a security issue, sir. We don't want to do anything without warning you.
Right. And that is your choice as to whether or not you do it.
Yeah, you can turn auto updates on or off, yeah.
Right. And so for the very few apps that I actually use, I leave auto update turned on.
Okay. Well, good enough. Thank you. You've put my mind at ease. I wanted to make sure I just wasn't, thrashing around a little bit unnecessarily.
No, yep. You probably are not.
Okay.
Although, you might keep track... For a while, you're down in the basement doing paperwork anyway.
Yep.
So you might want to keep track for a while as to which ones update and what the version number goes to.
I just might do that.
There you go.
Okay.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. That is the one problem with every operating system. We see it a lot in Linux. something updates almost every day. Luckily, unless you're updating the kernel itself, you don't have to reboot, and it can all happen in the background. But something updates almost every day because you've got somebody like me. I use thousands and thousands of programs, and all, you know, when somebody has a security update, I want it now.
Yeah, somebody was wondering though on the app, the iHeart, to get it from the like the Google Store or the Microsoft Store.
Yes,
depends on what OS you're on. If you're on Windows, you get it from the Microsoft Store. If you're on Android, you get it from the Google Play Store. If you're in Chrome on Windows or Chrome on the Mac, you'd get it from the Google Store.
Right, but if you want it on your phone or your Chromebook, your best place to get it is from the Google Play Store. If you're, and as Steve said, depending on what platform you're on, their store has it. A product like iHeartRadio or our app is available pretty much for everything.
Yeah, so. Everywhere. Just do a Google search.
Odyssey is the other app for the other half of the radio stations.
Right.
So there's two big companies that own all the radio stations in the country, just about. And one of them is iHeart and the other one is Odyssey.
Yeah.
That's about right.
Used to be Entercom and Clear Channel. They renamed themselves because everyone hated those companies.
Right.
And we here at member-supported Jazz 90.1 love our members who support us. We don't have giant corporate overlords.
Well, that's just like, you know, Facebook relabeling themselves Meta.
Right.
Like, that's going to change anything?
Right.
All you did was change the name. It's still the same BS.
Well, yeah, Enron changed their name. Yep. Blackwater changed their name. Yeah, and, you know, everybody, the minute you get a bad reputation, just change your name.
Yeah.
It's easy enough.
Speaking of bad reputations, have you heard about Windows Auto Patch?
No, please tell us.
So Microsoft has announced a new service, and it went live a couple weeks ago, called Windows Auto Patch. It will automatically update your Windows whenever it wants to.
Whenever it.
So that it can ease your IT burden.
Thanks, Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
So no more second Tuesday of the month and updating a massive number of things. Every little thing will get updated whenever it needs to.
And it will still continue to use you as a beta tester.
Instead of only losing your computer once a month, it'll lose it every couple of days.
And now that goes right back to what we've been saying about Linux. Linux, something updates every day. But on Linux, it happens in the background. You don't have to reboot, and it doesn't interrupt you.
Yeah.
Did you hear about Linus?
No, what did he do?
The new Linux kernel.
Oh, yes.
Is written on an M2 Mac.
Yes. Yes.
So that was quite ironic. So
he's always said he wants the fastest machine he can get because compiling takes forever.
Yeah. So the M2-based Linux is working pretty good because Linus is using it to write Linux.
That's exactly right. It's not desktop ready yet.
Yeah.
But it's Linus ready. So Linus Torvalds is the person who created Linux.
Yep.
Or as he pronounces it, Linux, but then he's Scandinavian or Norwegian or Finnish or Finnish, I think.
It's all
Finnish.
In the accent. Yeah. Speaking of which, the one thing that I was telling you before that I was leading up to was...
That's your segue?
Yep.
It's all in the accent, speaking of which we're going to talk about something entirely different?
No, it's still Linux.
And now for something completely different.
Going to Linux, you know, I've been very hesitant going there because I use Quicken. And that's one software package I have grown over the past decade that my late wife would probably be laughing at me before because I was never that precise about it, but I got into it and I've been using it for over 15 years now. Well, that was the only thing that was holding me back from going over to Ubuntu. So I did a little homework this weekend or this past week, and I was doing a little searching because within Ubuntu, they've got the app, an app store software. They call it the software store, and there are literally thousands upon thousands of programs that are out there that are free to try out, or you know, a lot of them are free just to even use. So I happened to stumble on this one that's called Money Dance. I thought, this looks interesting, and they claim they're a lot like Quicken. I figured, all right, I'll give it a shot and look
at it. It's free.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. And they tell you, yep, you can try it. You can set it all up. You can even do 100 transactions in it. You can do backup to the cloud. And if you like it, it's a one-time fee of $49.99. Here's the other kicker.
One time, not one time a year.
Right.
Whereas every month I get new ads for a new Quicken.
Yeah, Quicken charges you yearly. They are what we say Windows is going to go to. I don't own it anymore. I have to pay for a yearly subscription. With Money Dance, I can literally put it on as many machines and platforms within my family that I want.
One license per household, no matter how many computers you have.
Yep. Right. And you can customize it any which way you want. You set up reminders. It looks identical to Quicken. You can even tie it to your bank and have it download the registry from your bank to tie things out.
They have phone versions, too.
Well, it runs on Windows.
It runs on Windows,
Mac, Linux, iOS, Android.
Yeah.
So I mean, can add my receipt when I'm at the register and don't have to pile them into my wallet to get back home.
Yeah. It is such a great program for $49.99.
And it's been around since 1997, so it's 25 years old.
Yeah.
It's not a flash in the pan, folks. Yeah.
But if you've been, you know, looking for something to do your home finance, that's very user-friendly.
It even looks like Quicken.
Yeah.
So the transition will be easy.
Yeah, it's so easy. Yeah, I've already made up my mind. That put me over the edge that by January 1st, most of my computers, like I say, probably other than one laptop, will be all over to Xubuntu. I do not want to look back and go see Windows ever again being used as a beta tester. And like I say, the one key program that I do on my machine downstairs is the Quicken. But now I can do it on my phone. I can do it on a tablet, wherever I want to put it in. And tell you what, I put in a couple questions that I had doing stuff. Support is great. They won't get back to you probably right as soon as you do it. But within a day or two, they are answering you back. If you have any other questions, they say, please, let us know, and we'll, you know, help you out. They've got great documentation on how to set it up and do things. It is a great program. So if you've been looking for an alternative to Quicken, I highly recommend Money Dance. It is a great program. Try it out. You can try it out, like I say, for free. And you can enter in, you know, just set up an account. And it even walks you through some of that
and
stuff.
And it's all local, by the way. It's not, you're not using their servers for anything unless, unless you, I suppose, you know, if you want to save your, if you want to back it up.
I have it back up to my Google Drive.
Right.
My master file is up on Google Drive. They even walk you through on how to set it up there so all your devices can use the same file. So I created two folders up on my Google Drive, one for Money Dance and one for backup of Money Dance.
Oh, by the way, those data are encrypted.
Yeah.
Just so you know, before anybody asks, it's encrypted.
Yep. Yeah. And like I say, take a look at it. It doesn't cost you anything. Don't like it. To uninstall it and you're done. But if you're a Quicken fan and don't want to pay that yearly fee, and because they also charge a separate fee. I was paying, I think it was $95 a year for both the update of the program and storage.
Right.
Because they won't let you store it any place else other than theirs. No. And it's like, yeah, no, I wanted some place in case my backups got messed up. So, but this, now I feel safe. It's up there on Google Drive and I got it two other places. So it's good to go. But if you're looking for a program that'll do that type of stuff, check it out. Whether you're Windows, Mac, Linux, whatever, try it out.
Right. And if I think you have to repay for an upgrade, I think. But still, half the price of a yearly subscription for something that updates every couple of years is still pretty cheap.
Yep.
You know, it's pretty cheap. There's also things like GNU Cash, and that's absolutely free, I believe. But it's not quite the same thing. But yeah, take a look at something like Money Dance. Like I said, it's been around for 25 years, so it's no flash in the pan, and it's an awfully good program. And yeah, for about 99% of everybody, it does everything you need it to do. It looks like Quicken. It works like Quicken.
Tracks your investments. It'll track stocks. I mean, a lot of stuff is, you know, right there.
Right. And like Dave said, it does account management and budgeting, investment tracking, multiple types of securities. You get graphs. You get reports. It's encrypted. I mean, you know.
Yeah, matter of fact.
Come on.
Matter of fact, Art just wrote in and said, yeah, he crossed over on his Mac to Money Dance about 10 years ago.
Yep.
Never went back. It's a great alternative. That's why I'm going the same way. I'm going definitely to do away with the Quicken and just stick with this. It's great.
And Cynics Picnic in Twitch asked, can you share a free alternative for Microsoft Word? Why, yes. Yes, we can. LibreOffice is a downloadable. It's a full office suite. It's got a word processor, spreadsheet, a database, a presentation program like PowerPoint. And that's absolutely free and lives on your computer. If you want to live in the cloud, then there's multiple choices, including Google's document, Google Docs and Google Sheets and all of that stuff. There's iWork. There's there's a plethora of them again. But if you're looking for something that directly replaces Microsoft Word, that is to say it lives on your computer, it runs on your computer, you have to do all your backups yourself, et cetera, then LibreOffice, which is LibreOffice, LibreOffice, Libre as in free. It is a full office suite that works dang exactly like Word and will even let you load Word documents and save them either in the LibreOffice format or back to Word. I used LibreOffice when I was at RIT. I can say this now because I'm retired. And, you know, we were a Microsoft house. God forbid it wasn't Microsoft. I used LibreOffice, and nobody ever knew. Yeah. I would get documents from them, and I could read them. I would send documents to them in Microsoft's own format, and they would read them. Documents and spreadsheets and forms and everything. So, yeah, it's all doable, and... And LibreOffice is probably the place to start.
Yeah, for the average user, I mean, what they charge now for Microsoft Office, the suite, and that, it's ridiculous when there are so many alternatives that you can do for free and do the same thing that you would do with that paid version and save the money.
Right, right. So if you're looking for... that kind of an alternative. There are also lightweight things, right? There's, of course, I can't think of the name now. It starts with an A.
IME Word? No. That used to be one.
AMI. Yeah. I forget what it's called, but there's...
Alternative 2.
Yeah, Alternative 2 will tell you. There's alternatives for word processors and spreadsheets that are free and small. So if you don't need a full office suite or you don't have a lot of room on a machine that you're using, you can use one of these programs. AbiWord, A-B-I-W-O-R-D, AbiWord, and G-Calc? That's not right. There's another one. But you can use all of those programs. Most of them, like I said, are free. GNUmeric, I believe. Okay.
Whoa.
All righty then.
Oh.
Apparently.
He's got that volume needs adjusting.
We really need to hear the accordion, I guess.
Yeah. I can't hear anything now.
I got to wait.
Yeah, I see
I
that.
I had it where I normally play everything.
I get it. All right, we're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1, 29 minutes after the hour. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve.
Damn,
next,
that hurt
our member-supported
my ears.
Jazz 90.1.
I like it when they get to the better part.
I think that's all it is.
Yeah, so you're not going to get to the better part. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. Oh, they did get to it.
My girl is on centerfold, and I'm upset.
That's the part I was waiting for.
There you go. Yeah, so we're back. It's more Soundbites. Again, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. Okay, I'm skipping that one. I'm going right to this one. Winamp.
Oh, that's an old name.
The popular third-party Windows application for digital audio playback, usually of files ripped from CDs or stolen via peer-to-peer file sharing networks, is back. Developers posted the latest build of the software, Winamp 5.9 RC1 build 9999, late last month, 4 years since it was last updated. The current build is, and I quote, the culmination of 4 years' work since the last release, with a pandemic-related hiatus baked in, of course, by two different development teams. The application has been migrated to a more current code base with new features expected to be added after testing. At the peak of the download era, Winamp was renowned for its ability to play almost every popular audio format and the customization of the user interface with trippy visualizers, unique skins to change the application's appearance. With the proliferation of the iTunes Store and later digital streaming platforms like Spotify and Apple Music, Winamp's popularity waned. In 2013, parent company AOL shut down its development. The company was sold to the Belgian digital audio company Radionomy shortly after. The last version, 5.8, before this latest update was released in 2018 after a premature leak pressured developers to publish it themselves. It's still beta, so the usual caveats apply. Also, there is no report yet vis-a-vis camelid abuse. So, are you ready to whip the llama's ass once again? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I loved Winamp. It did everything. It did it well. It did it easily. It was a great piece of software. And I'm glad to see it's coming back. Like they said, I don't know how useful it is anymore since
Janet D in the YouTube chat. Not YouTube. I'm looking at. Yes, I am looking at YouTube. So Janet D in the YouTube chat says she uses it every day.
Winamp, great. Yeah. It is a great product. Well, you're glad to know there's a brand new version coming out. It's in beta right now, so you might want to hold off. But it's coming, and it's going to be
different.
I think it's going to be great. I hope it's going to be great. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. You've been extolling the virtues of LibreOffice compared to Microsoft Word. My question is, to try the program, is it possible to download LibreOffice without conflicting Microsoft Word before one decides which way to go?
Yes. Yes, with a caveat. They will not interfere with each other, except that when you install it, one of the things that it might ask you is, do you want to open Word documents with LibreOffice? So when you're testing, you would say no. And then later you can go back and change that.
You would say no not to open documents.
Because you're only testing, you don't want to be in the position of double-clicking on a Word document and it opens with LibreOffice when you would rather have it open with Microsoft Word.
Okay, but what would you advise comparisons that would help one choose which program to use?
Well, that depends entirely on what you do with Microsoft Word day to day. In general, my suggestion would be open a bunch of your documents, see if they work, write a bunch of new documents in it, and see what you think of it. I, like I said, LibreOffice did everything I needed it to do, including one thing that I never told anybody when I was working at RIT, because you keep some secrets to yourself. But often people would have documents that were broken in Word. They would open in LibreOffice.
It would just skip over the damage.
Right. Mm-hmm. In Word, when you open a document that's damaged, it gives up. It says, nope, there's something wrong here. I can't open this. Forget it. I'm not going to open it.
That's correct.
LibreOffice, it says, oh, there's something wrong here, but I can see that this latter part is still good. Why don't I just skip that middle bit?
Okay. And one other question. You say it's that LibreOffice is quite comparable to Microsoft PowerPoint, Excel, as well as Word,
yes.
Correct?
LibreOffice is a full suite, which includes all of those things.
Yeah, drawing module, database module, everything.
Yeah.
Great, I'll try it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And it is free. You can get it at LibreOffice.org. And it's L-I-B-R-E, office.
Because that's Latin.
Because that's Latin, LibreOffice.org. It's from the Document Foundation. And it's up to 7.3. So, again, it's been around for a very long time. And there's lots of stuff there. So go for it. Have fun. Yeah. It's got lots of pieces, by the way.
Actually, Ubuntu installs it automatically.
Automatically. So you get Base, which is the database, Calc, which is the spreadsheet, Draw, which is, believe it or not, the drawing program, Impress, which is the PowerPoint module, Math, which does formulas. For those people who do formulas, you can do more than I understand in it. And, of course, yeah. Writer, which is the word processor. So you have all of those available to you, and they're pretty good. They're pretty good, I got to say. Like I said, I used them for years. I do most of my stuff now in Google Docs, but that's only because I don't need much, you know, money of the same capabilities anymore. And
you're not writing 100-page reports to justify your expenses anymore.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And I used to do that every month,
yeah,
with charts and graphs and everything, man.
How many students and faculty are there at the College of Business?
Exactly. And then before that, when I was working in ITS or ISC in those days, and I, you know, I was supporting the entire faculty of the institute all the way around in those days, the college. It was a lot, and LibreOffice did me more than I needed to do. It was fine. I wrote a couple of books in it. And some plays, as a matter of fact. So there's all kinds of capabilities in that product. It's really excellent. And it's multi-language and you know, blah, 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 blah. So all the things that you would expect from fully fledged, business ready, highly capable office suite you get in LibreOffice. So, and if you're just looking for something to dash off a letter to Aunt Fanny, then, you know, Abbey Word, which is much more minimal, but still has, I think, a spell checker and all that, still does all of that stuff that you would need to do.
If you got a Gmail account, Google Docs.
Well, that's exactly right.
I mean, it's already there for you, and we've been talking about before. You know, you save it stores it for free, and no matter where you are, you can pull up the information. Whether you're halfway around the world, you just log into your Google account, and there it is, the information.
RIT's website says they have students from 49 states and over 100 other countries. I want to know what state they don't have, and they should put out a special scholarship to get that state in so we can have all 50 states.
Alaska?
Maybe Hawaii, because that's such a long flight.
Oh, maybe. Sure. Sure.
That's probably the farthest away you could go to school.
Right.
If you lived in Hawaii. Well, no, actually, what's his name? Doc Rock is a Mac pundit on YouTube who lives in Honolulu, and the company he works for is in Massachusetts. So he says a couple of times a year he has to fly from Hawaii to Massachusetts.
That's got to be a long flight.
Yeah, that's...
Although, I should look that up. We were watching American Ninja Warrior, and they had a contestant from Guam. Flew in 6,000 miles from Guam, and they had three people from different parts of Alaska. One guy from that little tiny island between Russia and the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
Right in the middle of the Bering Strait.
Yep, yep. There's a guy who, I hope he wasn't competing in Las Vegas because he wouldn't be used to that temperature.
Well, this was Texas.
Oh, yeah, right.
From Texas, then they went to Universal in California, and then the finals are in Las Vegas.
Yeah. There's lots of alternatives for word processing, but for an office suite. And really it depends on what you're interested in paying and what your needs are. Like we said, LibreOffice does almost there are some very esoteric things that LibreOffice doesn't do, but they're very few and far between. And for 99.99999% of you, LibreOffice, which is absolutely free, would do everything you need to do. In fact, for 99% of you, Google Docs or I've suddenly forgot what it's called, iWorks, would do what you need to do. So there are alternatives, and they're free. So. You can keep paying for Word Office Suite if you want to. God bless you, but you can get most of that stuff, the equivalents for free, without theft. I know that there are people who have versions of Microsoft Office that they did not pay for.
For home use, though, I can't see why you would need to have a high-end product like that versus... LibreOffice or Google Docs, because if you're just composing a basic letter,
right?
Both of those programs have those basic templates in there, and not many people write letters anymore.
Well, there's that. I mean, I've written books in LibreOffice. I've written books in Google Docs.
Yeah.
They're not just for the quick dash off letter anymore. They're for real work. I've had students, in fact, my last couple of years of teaching, I insisted that students use Google Docs for their papers because there's great capabilities of inserting footnotes and references and all kinds of things with that.
There's a meme going around about a classroom that used a shared Google Doc all year long. And each student put in their own notes and explanations. And when some other student had a question about something, they could go back and find it in the notes.
That's not new. I did that for my master's degree. We had our classes all did that. Students do that to this day. It's a very common and very useful thing.
Back when I was in school, we didn't have shared docs.
Back when you were in school, you could share the chisel.
Back when I was in school, we didn't have computers.
Yeah.
I was in the first class that really had computers, and our teachers were a couple of weeks ahead of us at RIT learning what to teach us.
Yeah.
I got points taken off for reading ahead in the book and using a command we hadn't done yet.
I can remember at RIT, though, going there and working on the VM machines.
Yeah.
We had to do everything, program in there. I could log in from home into the servers there, and everything was, text-based. That's, you logged into there, and you had to create your file and then write your program, compile it, run it, see if it ran, and then once you had it run, you'd submit it to the professor. And
when I worked at the computer center selling Apple IIs, this little girl came in one day and said, "Could I sit at one?" It was a cute little thing, 8, 10 years old maybe, Can I sit at one of these computers and do my homework? Oh, sure. Why not? I wandered over after a while and looked there. She was doing stuff I couldn't do at that time. She was writing programs, putting them on her own little floppy and taking them away and doing her homework.
My son was in the robotics team in high school in his senior year. All through high school, we tried to get him to join this robotics team, and we finally did in senior year. And he says, "Wow, that was fun. Why didn't you make me do that before?" Yeah. But they're building and competing robots in high school. Yeah. We didn't even do that in college. Yeah, exactly.
My granddaughter was in it for 3 years. Yep. And the main did good at it.
The main room in Fairport, the robotics center is in the middle school.
Yes. Yeah. You get to play with that stuff these days, and you get to learn those things. Because now you can buy those kits for home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you buy the kit, you stick a Raspberry Pi in the middle of it, and suddenly it's walking around doing whatever it wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing stuff.
And a lot of the code is already there up in a huge library that, you know, for doing various things that, you know, if you're not good at writing code, don't worry about it. Just, again, you've got a repository up there that you can download, change whatever you want to do, and load it onto your Pi, and away you go.
Yep. There's some really amazing. Of course, you can't get a Raspberry Pi right now.
Yeah.
That's a different story.
Arduinos are dirt cheap, and creating your own code for those. I've got one of those. I haven't played around with that yet.
They're pretty amazing. I haven't played around with them much myself lately. They're just
too many things to do and not enough time to do.
Yeah. Pre-orders sold out on the
Raspberry Pi
kits.
Yeah, forget it. Not this year.
Yeah, probably not.
They say
things are loosening up, but not that much.
Car manufacturers can't even get enough to, you know, get. You go to most lots and cars, you know, the lots are empty. They're begging for good used cars.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of cars. Companies have started shipping their cars missing features.
Right.
Because they can't get the chip. You know, the silly, like the seat heater or something like that. You don't really, really need that yet.
Yeah. Come September, October, November, that'll be a little different.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's one thing I love on mine is that seat warmer.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know it had it in there.
My wife's new lease has a steering wheel warmer.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh.
Does it have a steering wheel cooler?
No.
Man, because that would be useful now.
Yeah.
The but Janet is still using Winamp every day, and our Chandra says WGMC is on TuneIn too. That's right. That's right. So you can if you have the Roku TuneIn channel, you can use that to listen to the show. So there's you know, that stuff, and now, you know, if you've got unlimited data on your phone, you can just listen to it all the time through that. You know, when I am in the car, which isn't as much as it used to be anymore, but when I am in the car, there's nothing I really want to listen to, particularly, but I can put on a station, a Pandora station or a TuneIn station, or
that's why I sit there and I've got for at work. I hate the local stations. I'm sorry, too many darn commercials. So I just plug in my phone, play, you know, the Pandora or the iHeartRadio app, and a lot less commercials.
I almost haven't listened to the radio at all in years because I listen to so many podcasts.
Right. Right, I'm not in the car often long enough anymore to listen to podcasts. But yeah,
that really hurt when I cut my commute from 45 minutes down to 15 minutes.
I'm sorry. I feel bad for you now. I know people who do 20. What did it used to be? The average American commute was 22 minutes or 27 minutes. I don't remember what it was. But I know people who did podcasts that were, you know, 20 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
You get in the car, you turn on the podcast, you get where you're going, and it's done.
According to the Census Bureau, as of 2019, the average commute is 27.6 minutes.
There you go. It was something like that. So, people were making podcasts that were exactly an average commute long.
Hmm. Mike Rowe has a podcast that the way I heard it, based on some of his books, and it started out being a 20-minute podcast talking about the book, a chapter of the book. And then they added, let's interview some people.
Right.
And then they talked about the book. They talked about the way they heard it. And now they're interviewing people. And so this 20-minute podcast has turned into an hour and a half.
Yeah, right, right. Well, and that's the beauty of podcasts. They don't have to have a length.
Yeah.
A friend of mine does a podcast called Murder Most Foul, where he talks about, mm-hmm. well, murders. And it's as long as it needs to be. You know, some of them are shorter, some of them are longer, and that's fine. That way you get to tailor to...
You have full control.
The subject rather than to the time.
I started watching third season of The Orville last night on Hulu. Well, the first two I watched were an hour and 1 minute long with no commercials. So usually an hour-long show is only 40 minutes.
Right,
yeah.
This is an hour-long show. That's an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was designed for streaming. It doesn't have to put commercials in it.
Well, and it's designed for streaming. Archandra says, I wish Mike would go back to the homages for the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he started it being an homage to like Paul Harvey and the rest of the story.
Right. But yeah, so the entertainment industry is changing. Right now, there's still a place for shows like this one that happen, because you need to call somebody. you need your question answered. And it's easy and convenient and fast to do it on a radio station like this.
The entertainment industry is currently worth about $700 billion.
Right.
Expected to reach $2 trillion in the next 5 years.
But the problem with all of that is that...
And there's still nothing to watch.
Well, exactly. The problem is it used to be the distributor's business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you wanted your show on the air, you had to kowtow to distributors. They only had so much space, and they took the best of what was out there.
There were only three channels.
There were only three channels, or two, if you're really old. But now, everybody's a content provider.
Yep.
You can create your own content and stick it out there and find your own audience. It's in many ways a beautiful thing. And that's one of the things we do with Mastermind Lounge. You have a bunch of people you want to talk to. It's still, it can be one-on-one or a group thing, but it's live, question and answer, that sort of fair. But it doesn't require anybody else. You just throw it up there and there it is. You say, I'll be here.
It's own niche.
These are my times. These are my dates. Go watch, You can pay for it. So it's not a bad thing. So there's that. That's the sort of thing that happens. That's happening these days because of the change in communication. Computers, the internet in particular, really changed the way that people communicate.
Anyone can have a platform.
You can have your own Discord server.
But the problem now is that anyone can have a platform.
Well, that's exactly right. But you can, if you want to have your own Discord server, go ahead and set it up. Talk to anybody about anything you want to talk to them about. Doesn't matter. So, if there's only 11 people in the world who care about what you care about, all 11 of you from all over the world can still get together and talk about that thing. It's an easy enough thing to do. And we're seeing more and more people who are really getting together online in ways that they never did. And part of that is the pandemic, of course. People are staying in more. Mm-hmm. So things that used to be live are now more often video chats. But even so, it's still a way for people to get together and communicate. All right. That music tells us that we have communicated far too much for 1 week. That's right. This show is about to become history. But don't despair, because we will be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. You have been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, that's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. All right, this show is over. I want you all to go vote in the poll. We've only got 39 votes. We can hit 50 votes this week. Go vote in the poll. And we'll be back next week. Be good to one another, will you? We'll see you in just 166 hours.